afternoon. Thanks so much for tuning in today. I'm Susie Larson, and this is Live the Promise, and we are here to help you engage in a strong and active walk of faith. Thanks so much for tuning in. We've got a great show planned for you today. Well, according to a recent Barna study, do you believe this? Less than 1 in 5 practicing Christians hold a biblical worldview. Hear that again. Less than 1 in 5 practicing Christians hold a biblical worldview. Why would that be? And isn't that alarming? Well, my guest today says that there's actually, amidst that stat, there's reason for hope. Dr. Jeff Myers from Summit Ministries joins me today, and together we'll explore some of today's worldviews. In the process, we'll look at how it'll strengthen our faith and increase our hope as we acquire a biblical worldview. We've got reason for hope. And boy, I told him before the show, lots of times books for that, you know, teach on a biblical worldview have kind of a prickly edge to them, or I don't know, I can't even explain it. But this book has got such an invitation to it. Title of Jeff Myers' book is The Secret Battle of Ideas About God, Overcoming the Outbreak of 5 Fatal Worldviews. He does it so well. We'll get him on in just a moment. A couple quick announcements. We do this every year on Live the Promise. And so if you're new to Live the Promise, I'm inviting you to join us. I pray that you will. In fact, it's kind of a risk every year because I'm throwing this out there, hoping somebody will take it seriously. And every year, thousands of friends engage in random acts of kindness. It's called The Great Giveaway. We do it every holiday season. And so now is the time. On your mark, get set, go. Engage in a random act of kindness. And I would love for you to do it outside your comfort zone, if you don't mind. And then on Thursday, December 21st, we will open the phone lines and dedicate the whole show to The Great Giveaway, where you come back from the mission field, so to speak, and you tell us your stories. And the 2 most inspiring stories will get a great gift basket full of amazing books and Christmas goodies. Each of those baskets kind of come in at a value about $100. And it's just our way of saying thank you for being the hands and feet of Christ. And we'll send out a lot of Christmas goodies on that day as well. So don't wait, okay? Be praying now. Ask God, call me out of my comfort zone. Open my eyes to the needs around me this holiday season, and then meet some of those needs, and then come back and tell us about them. Even if you want to tell us about them anonymously, we want to hear, okay? I also want to welcome friends tuning in our Bismarck and Hartford locations. Maybe you're tuning in as a result of our digital billboards that have just gone up in your area. If that's the case, I want to hear from you. Email me, Susie@myfaithradio.com. Put new listener in the subject line. If you leave me your mailing address, I'll pick some books off of our Faith Radio shelf as a way of welcoming you, but also would love for you to request a welcome packet. We'd love to get that into your hands. It's free. Just request it on our website at myfaithradio.com. That's myfaithradio.com. Let me tell you about my guest now. We'll get him on the show. Dr. Jeff Myers is an author, teacher, and president of Summit Ministries. He's one of America's most respected authorities on Christian worldview, apologetics, and youth leadership development. He and his family live in Colorado. We're honored to have him with us today. Dr. Jeff, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Susie. It's great to be on your show. Looking forward to a fun hour.
Me too as well. And Dr. Jeff, we always start every day talking scripture, and I'm wondering if you either have a life verse or just one you've been thinking about these days that you can share with us.
Yeah, well, I'm thinking a lot about the 1 Corinthians chapter 2, verse 16. It says we have the mind of Christ. It just it really emphasizes that the natural man tends to think in natural ways. But when we recognize that there's a spiritual reality, it changes the way we think, not only about spiritual things, but about everything else. And once we do that, we can become very confident that we understand what God wants us to do and how we should live our lives, but also how we should be a blessing to everybody around us and be confident in what we believe.
Hmm. You know, I'm thinking as you're talking about Galatians 2:20, that I've been crucified with Christ. It's no longer I who live, but Christ who lives in me. And the life I now live in the flesh, I live by faith in the Son of God, who loved me and gave himself up for me. And I couldn't help but think that connected to your verse. And I'm wondering, Dr. Jeff, and we'll get into the depths of other worldviews and just some of the how-tos that you offer for keeping a biblical worldview. But when you think about that, the Spirit lives in us, so we have the mind of Christ, and it's no longer we who live. How is it? Why the drift? Why has it happened so strongly where people who are filled with the Spirit of God don't feel a conviction of the Spirit? Maybe, I'm sure the Spirit, Holy Spirit's doing his job, but why is it such a miss on certain levels that seem obvious if you're reading Scripture?
It does seem obvious in a way, Susie, but you know, a lot of people tend to think of their spiritual life as being one compartment of their overall life.
That's a good point.
They don't really think, oh, well, we are going to go to church on Sunday morning because we believe in God and we honor him. But that doesn't really apply to how we vote or how we view the issues of our day or the environment or how we solve the poverty problem. all of those kinds of things, and people end up just sort of picking up little ideas that they run across along the way. And that's why I called the book The Secret Battle of Ideas About God. And I had a guy say, oh, are you a big conspiracy person or whatever? I said, no, it's not a conspiracy, but it is a secret battle in the sense that ideas just come into our minds and hearts the way viruses come into our bodies. They don't come in fully formed. There's nobody out there who became a New Ager because they, you know, went to Tibet and studied for several years. And, you know, nobody became a Marxist after reading all the collected works of Marx and Lenin. We pick up our ideas, little political speech here, a little conversation there. Somebody says something around the water cooler that seems interesting and clever. And so we tend to not have the mind of Christ when it comes to all the other things that take place outside of church. Very easy for people to get tricked.
Hmm. Well, you know, the term biblical worldview even may mean different things to different people. Maybe explain what you mean to start there.
Yeah, when I think of a worldview, I think of how somebody sees the world, their view of the world, and their view for the world. So, you know, we all have questions like, where did we come from, and what is the purpose of life, and what happens when we die? But even more than that, Susie, everybody's asking questions like, am I loved? I want to know that there's somebody out there who really loves me, not just for what I can do for them, but because of who I am. And, you know, I want to know, is there any hope for the world? Why do I hurt? I have pain. Why, you know, and what happens is we try to come up with answers to those questions. And if we really don't understand Jesus that well, and we really haven't studied the Bible that well, we tend to take other people's word for it in trying to answer those questions. And we wonder why we're so unsatisfied with the answers.
Mm. Well, in the chapter Invisible Warfare, The Hidden Forces That Shape Our Lives, you tell a story about a man named Rick Rescorla. Did I say that right? He's a decorated military hero. Oh, my goodness, that story. Well, tell us his story, if you would.
Well, that story opens the book, and I challenged people, when you get the book, if you can read the first chapter and put it down, then I did not do my job.
Yeah.
Because we have this is such – I mean, all of a sudden you realize, wow, every time I'm watching television, I'm picking up ideas. And I listen to the radio and I pick up ideas. And I've got all kinds of stories about that. I mean, I have conversations every day, even just yesterday, a conversation about the issue of abortion with a guy on the street in Durango, Colorado. He didn't expect that topic to come up. I didn't expect that topic to come up, but it really left him deep in thought when I was able to share my convictions that confronted what he had always believed. But I guess the story of Rick Rescorla was an important one because he was a war hero. He was a hero in Vietnam, was part of the famous battle called Ia Drang. Some people might have remembered that because Harold Moore, the general, wrote a book called We Were Soldiers Once. And there was a movie made on that. But anyway, Rick was the hero of that battle. He came back to America. He went into the security business and became the vice president of security for the Morgan Stanley Company, which had its offices in World Trade Center Tower 2. And he said, this is not a defensible building. It's going to be attacked someday. His bosses said, well, we're staying here. We've got a long-term lease. He said, if we are staying here, then I'm going to drill our people so they will know exactly what to do in a time of emergency. And, you know, sometimes in life we sort of hope that we would be a hero if a difficult situation arose. But the truth is we end up doing in panic situations exactly what we've trained ourselves to do. And heroes become heroes because it's a reflex of what they have trained themselves to do over a long period of time. And that's what Rick did with the people in the Morgan Stanley Company. When he heard the explosion when an airplane on September 11th, 2001 hit the building next to theirs. He called the Port Authority office and they said, it's just the building next door. Keep everybody in their places. And he said, well, forget that. I'm getting my people out of here. And he did. He evacuated his people. By the time the second airplane hit the second tower, Rick had evacuated his employees out of the building. Of the 2,700 Morgan Stanley employees in the World Trade Center complex that day, all but six survived.
Amazing. And as you said, he'd been
saved.
Go ahead.
He saved thousands of lives.
It's just amazing.
And he did it as a reflex. Yeah. This is what we do. You know, we train ourselves. We're prepared. We recognize that there are enemies. There are battles. We don't lay awake at night and worry about that, but we train and prepare ourselves. And as Christians, we do the same thing in the battle of ideas.
And I love the application, because by habit and instinct, because he trained himself over time, he knew how to read the scenario. And what was so fascinating to me is he not only saved, you know, 2,700 people, or almost that many, he was singing while he was doing it. That's what people remembered, as he's bringing people down the stairs, he's singing. Say a word about that part of his story.
Yeah, this is a guy who had grown up in Cornwall, England, and he had learned these battle hymns growing up. He was singing through his bullhorn to people to calm them down and help motivate them as they were evacuating and keep their minds off of their fear. And after he got everybody down to ground level, he called his wife and said, "I just want you to know, if anything happens, I love you. You've made my life." And then he turned around and went back into the building. He was last seen on the 10th floor stairwell, headed back up to rescue more people. And his body was never recovered. The people thought about that later, and they said, "What was it that he was singing to us?" And they recover, they kind of put it up, pieced it all together. He was singing to them a Cornwallian battle hymn from the area of England where he had grown up. "Men of Cornwall, stand ye steady. It cannot be ever said, for the battle we're not ready. Stand and never yield."
We're going to pause here. Absolutely amazing when you think about this Rick Rescorla. And how, even as the security advisor for Morgan Stanley, he made them practice evacuation drills. And if top executives complained, he confronted them. I mean, that takes some kind of grit to say, "We're doing this. If you're putting me in charge of this, we're doing this." Wonder how that applies to us, practicing, walking in the Word of God, heeding the voice of God, obeying Him, even trusting in His love. Dr. Jeff Myers writes about knowing that you're loved and how important that is to your biblical worldview. Oh my goodness, we've got lots to talk about. This hardcover book, The Secret Battle of Ideas About God, we've got 3 copies. Email if you want in on the drawing, livethepromise@myfaithradio.com. livethepromise@myfaithradio.com. Don't forget your mailing address and put "The Secret Battle" in the subject line so I know this is the book you're looking for. We'll be back in a minute. Thanks for tuning in today. I'm Susie Larson. This is Live the Promise, talking to Dr. Jeff Myers about his really amazing book, The Secret Battle of Ideas About God, Overcoming the Outbreak of 5 Fatal Worldviews. And Dr. Jeff, you said before the last break that we're in this battle right now, but our attacks occur every minute of every day, and it's the battle of ideas. Maybe unpack that more, if you would.
Yeah, you bet. There aren't tanks in this battle. There aren't artillery emplacements. There aren't battleships. This is a battle of ideas, and an idea is a thought or concept about how things are in the world. We sometimes don't think that ideas are really all that influential, but if you realize it, you're picking up maybe hundreds or even thousands of ideas every day, and those ideas end up affecting the way we think. And here was my thought in writing the book. I wanted to help Christians think of ideas in a new way. How is it that we're so susceptible to bad ideas? Because I find that all the time. I think, wait a second, I know that's not true, but yet I just believed it. Or I saw a movie and, well, they made that idea seem really compelling, even though I know it's not right. So I'm always having to be on guard about that. I'm not nervous or terrified or afraid or paranoid about it, but I want to be thoughtful in the same way that if you're walking along a dark street in an unfamiliar town at night, you don't want to be horrified by that, but you definitely want to be thoughtful and be wise, right? So that's kind of how we want to live our lives. So I think ideas, bad ideas, come into our minds and hearts like viruses. And if you thought about viruses, it's kind of an icky sort of infection. A bacterial infection can be killed with antibacterial medication, but a virus can't be killed because it's not, strictly speaking, alive to begin with. It's just a bit of genetic code coded with a protein. It comes into the body, it hijacks the cells, tricks the cells into reproducing itself. So if you have a case of the flu, by the time you realize you're sick, you may have a trillion copies of that virus in your body. So I think ideas do the same thing. They come into our minds and hearts, and they make us miserable. And I'll give you one quick example. A lot of people very nervous about this guy, Richard Dawkins. He's an atheist and an Oxford professor, and he speaks with a distinguished British accent, and he's very witty and clever. And he's mean about Christians. He thinks Christians are not only wrong, he thinks they're stupid. And so he says all these nasty things, and he gets on all the television shows and the talk shows and things like that. And Christians are all really nervous. Wow, this guy, he says some interesting things, and he's pretty sure that evolution is right and all of that. Well, you know, Susie, I went back and started asking questions like, well, what does Richard Dawkins say about love? You know, what I want to know about creation versus evolution, but I, in my heart of hearts, what I really want to know is, does anybody really love me? And when he talks about love, he says, oh, there's no such thing as love. It's just a chemical reaction in your brain. Really? Mm-hmm. Well, that doesn't really help me answer my deep questions in life. Well, what about the problem of pain? Richard, is there any comfort for people who are in pain? And he said in his book, The Blind Watchmaker, DNA neither knows nor cares. DNA just is, and we dance to its music.
Wow.
I just don't find that comforting.
No, you know what exactly. I'm saying?
I wonder sometimes if we make this too intellectual. Our heart questions are really important. And these other worldviews that are competing for our attention, they make good arguments in some areas, and they trick us into thinking that they're right. But if we just step back, we'd say, you know, that doesn't even answer the questions that people in the world are really asking.
Boy, that's so good. You touched on these five questions. I want to walk through each one and say what you want, and we can circle back to them, too. But you've got some amazing stories in the book as well. First question is, am I loved? If I were to disappear, would anyone miss me? Talk about how that factors in to a biblical worldview, but also spin off of a wrong worldview if we don't rightly interpret that question.
Well, you know, a secular worldview says you're not anything special. It's just evolution that took place, and your parents had sexual chemistry, sexual chemicals operating in their brain, and so they decided to have sexual relations, and here you are. There's no meaning to it. It's just the way it happens. A new spiritualist or a new age worldview says your individual life is not important. All that matters is that you melt away in your ego and just become one with all that is. Now, the Marxist worldview says your purpose in life is to incite revolution. If you're not a revolutionary, then you're part of the problem. You're actually evil. You need to get out of the way or eliminate yourself. So you end up with all of these different views that don't answer the big heart questions that we're asking, and yet they're the ones that are talked about all the time in the news media, in television programs, and documentaries, and things that our friends believe. So, you know, I have a lot of examples, Susie. I don't know how much you want to go into that, but
let's go with this, Dr. Jeff. We've got about 4 minutes to our bottom of the hour break. Am I loved? If I were to disappear, would anyone miss me? I'd just love for you to speak to someone maybe who stumbled on the dial today and give them the biblical worldview answer to that question.
Well, you know, the answer comes in Jesus. And there are five specific teachings that I focus on in the book that came from Jesus that a lot of people don't think about. In fact, a lot of believers have overlooked and are never even considered. And one of them is the way Jesus talked about love. In Greek times, people would talk about eros, or sexual love. People would talk about philios, or brotherly love, or family love, the kind of love that makes you want to protect your children in the way that a bear protects her cubs. But Jesus went beyond that and said, no, true love is this, that you give of your life for your friend. It's what the Greeks called agape love. It means unconditional love. It's being loved even when you're not lovable. That's the kind of love that Jesus gives us that other people simply can't ever give. And if we're just trying to turn to romance or or our jobs for significance, we never really feel the sense of love that we have in Jesus.
And that question, if I were to disappear, would anyone miss me? When you think of what Scripture says, that the Lord delights in every detail of your life, the thoughts towards you are outnumber the grains of sand. He knows about every hair on your head. I mean, you see and hear the affection of God for his creation when you read Scripture. It is amazing what a bad rap God has gotten, because it truly, it's like when you think of the unfathomable love and the very unique love he has for each one of us, it's priceless, you know?
In his love, Jesus calls us. This is what he says. I've called you. And that idea of a calling is the Latin word would be vocare, from which we get our word vocation. In other words, what you do that makes your life important is the fact that you have been personally called by Jesus. He knows you by name. He calls you. He wants you personally, not just people like you or people who like him. He wants you personally and has put a calling on each one of our lives.
So, Jeff, we got about a minute and a half before this break. I would love to know if and when you've engaged a skeptic or even an atheist and spoke about this tender love of God, what kind of response you've received.
Well, I have those kind of conversations all the time. Just yesterday, I mentioned earlier, I was in Durango, Colorado, and I was visiting with a man, and I was talking about my 20-year-old son and how he's much more mature than I was when I was 20. When I was 20 years old, I got my girlfriend pregnant, and I was so scared. I didn't know what to do. She didn't know what to do. So we got an abortion. And I have had to live every day of my life realizing the consequences of that decision. And this man I was talking to said, I am so grateful in our country for safe, legal abortion. And I just paused and I said, I understand why you would say that, but did you hear what I just said? That I have had regret every single day of my life for this. And I said, if I meet a young person who's pregnant and they're considering abortion, I try to talk them out of it. And he said, well, you know, I guess I feel passionately about both sides. You know, he was just trying to be conciliatory. But I said, you know, so many people end up using abortion as a form of birth control. They never really find the kind of love that they want, the kind of love they can have in Jesus. And, you know, it's fascinating. Just standing on the street talking about an issue, he certainly didn't expect me to take a stand on it. You know, and he was trying to say what he thought for most people.
I have to jump in here because his audio is going out, but I also love the tenderness with which he addressed this man who stood where he stood. There's a way to do this with love that reflects Christ's heart. Talking to Dr. Jeff Myers. Got 3 copies of this great book. Email livethepromise@myfaithradio.com. Put the secret battle in the subject line, and we will be back in a minute. You're having a really great day. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Susie Larson. This is Live the Promise, talking to Dr. Jeff Myers. He's written a fantastic book. Oh, my goodness. This is one every Christian needs, I believe. Title is The Secret Battle of Ideas About God, Overcoming the Outbreak of 5 Fatal Worldviews. And I mentioned at the open of the show, sometimes apologetic books and worldview books have kind of a prickly edge to them, you know? This one is just so informative and truly focuses on what matters to God and why we need to know what's going on in our culture today. In the book, you explore 5 really important questions. We've tackled the first one, am I loved? In other words, if I were to disappear, would anyone miss me? And how and why that matters as to why people are led astray in unbiblical worldviews. Well, the next one is, why do I hurt? Bad things have happened to me. Can I overcome them and find joy? Speak to that one, if you would, Jeff.
Susie, a lot of that, my thoughts on that came out of a very difficult personal experience. And I found myself so overwhelmed trying to raise my children on my own, and I just started to sink into a depression. And I had some friends come alongside of me, and it was wonderful. But I really began to wonder, you know, God, do you really have my best interests at heart? It wasn't that I questioned God's existence. It was that I wondered, okay, I think you're there, but I don't think you're good. I think you're actually a bully. And I know a lot of people have had that kind of experience. They wonder, you know, Jesus, are you really there? And what Jesus says to that is, in this world you will have trouble. You will have trouble, but take heart, he says, I have overcome the world. The word overcome there is a battle word. It comes from the Greek goddess Nike. It's the word nikeo, and it means to deprive the enemy of its ability to cause harm.
Wow.
Think about that for a minute. You know, we sometimes expect that pain ends when, you know, we take a Tylenol and the headache goes away or whatever it is. That the pain ends when the feeling of pain ends. The biblical idea is that what we really deal with is suffering. That's unexplained pain. But when we understand pain from Jesus' perspective, the suffering takes on meaning. God is not as interested in ending our pain as he is in growing our dependence on him day to day. That's why Jesus prayed, give us this day our daily bread. This is why in the Old Testament, God provided the manna for people every day. During this very difficult period of time, I would lay in bed, I would wake up in the morning, and I would think, God, I just can't do this. And he would bring Lamentations 3, verses 22 and 23 to my mind. Because of the Lord's great love, we are not consumed. For his mercies are new every morning, and his faithfulness is great. And it was as if Jesus would say to me through that passage, I don't want you to think about the next 6 months. I don't want you to try to imagine how you're going to live the next 5 years of your life like this. Let's do today. My mercies are new today. And I can't tell you, Susie, how that got me through those difficult times. There were even days, of course, where I would lay there and think, okay, that's a nice idea, Jesus, but I can't even do today. And it was as if he'd say, hey, my mercies are new every morning. Can you make it to lunchtime? Okay, yes, I think I can make it to lunchtime. Okay, great, get up. I'm right here with you. It is that daily dependence on Jesus that answers those questions about the profound experiences of pain that most of us have had in our lives.
You know, and even that's just beautiful, Jeff. And even to add to that, just something that I've really seen is that he does give us treasures in the dark places, as scripture says. We are better after the battle. There are benefits and takeaways from those hard, hard places. You know, I always say our trials pay us back when we lean in and trust God. Somehow, some way, we get through them and we're still standing and we're richer and wiser. I'd just love to know from your perspective, Jeff, how is that so for you after what you've walked through? How are you a better man, a more godly man, or what do you know about God that you didn't know before?
Well, I see people in a very different way, that's for sure. I feel a sense of assurance about God's love for me and his calling on my own life, but it helps me see more of what other people feel, what their experiences are, what they're going through, what their pains are. And because I know that Jesus is the answer at a new level, I mean, I knew it at an intellectual level, but this is at a whole life level. I've written a lot of worldview books, big textbooks, thousands of footnotes. I didn't have intellectual questions. But now I know at a deep life level, I am not afraid anymore to have conversations with people. I get into the most amazing conversations just because people sense there's somebody who's willing to talk, somebody who's willing to hear what I'm working through, what I've thought about so far, without being defensive, with just listening, just walking alongside. And I guess I would say it's just restored my ability to share Jesus with other people in a way that I think was there maybe, but I was more focused on providing intellectual answers before. Now I want to provide those intellectual answers, but in the context of a whole life, recognizing what people's experiences are and helping them feel that sense of blessing that comes from a personal relationship with Christ that affects everything, their heart, but also their minds.
Hmm. So these first two questions we've talked about, am I loved? And then secondly, why do I hurt? Bad things have happened to me. Can I overcome and find joy? In the first chapter, Am I Loved, you tell a story about a girl named Alex. And the reason I want you to share her story is that this shows what happens when we don't reconcile our hurts and our questions with God and his love and his word. We'll spin off and go somewhere else to something that maybe feel true, but it's destructive for us. So tell us her story, if you would.
That's right. Well, Alex's story is it's frightening. It's a cautionary tale. Alex was a Christian Sunday school teacher in her early 20s, but she was isolated from other believers. She just spent a lot of her time on the internet. She heard a story of a Syrian ISIS fighter, and she just was so horrified by the cruelty of it that she said, wrote something about it. Well, one of the ISIS fighters wrote her back, got in touch with her in social media, and they began corresponding. And what had initially been a horror at ISIS tactics turned into a sense of admiration. And ultimately, she was recruited by ISIS to join their ranks. She had converted to Islam and was just about to join ISIS when her grandparents, who she lived with, found out what was going on and helped her ease out of it. But it was a horrifying thing. One of the recruiters who came out of this later said, look, people like Alex, she said, should I go to a mosque? And they said, no, don't. The ISIS people said, no, why not? And they said, because we want them to be isolated. If we can isolate people, then we know we can indoctrinate them.
Man. And this ISIS member listened, right? Listened and gave gifts and suddenly gave her a place to belong. So she went from criticizing the cruel actions of ISIS to suddenly subscribing simply because she was hurting and in her pain, they listened. I mean, that's alarming when you think about it.
That's right. Wow. They listened. They gave her the story. They made her feel that she belonged. But in reality, they were just isolating her from everybody else who could tell her that what was happening was wrong. And it took a while for her to come out of this. She said she still misses her friends. You know, she really felt that she knows it was wrong, but she still misses that feeling of belonging. You know, the church has such an important role. So many Christians think, it's not really all that important. Church is not really a significant part of my life. I can be a Christian. It's just me and Jesus. But the truth is, it's that body of believers, even people we don't necessarily wouldn't choose to be with socially, or we might even be a little bit irritated by. It's that body life that becomes such an important part of how we learn to live out a biblical worldview.
Well, I was just going to piggyback on that, Jeff, and say how important it is that Christians become good listeners. I mean, in a day of such rant, shaking our fist, pointing our finger, and I will just even say, you know, yes, there are extremes who are parroting extreme doctrine that's so scary, and even they are hurting. Even they have a story. But I'm saying there's so many who maybe are in their lane that aren't screaming and shaking their fist, that would just love to have some questions answered if someone would stop pointing their finger, maybe draw them in and listen. I mean, that just is a tale of we could do a much better job at asking questions and not being threatened by people's broken stories, right?
Wouldn't that be incredible? I think sometimes I'm afraid to talk about my faith because I'm not sure what questions people will have, how they will handle it, or maybe they'll have a challenging point that I won't be able to articulate very well what I believe. Truth is, I think you're exactly right. People really just want somebody to connect with, somebody to listen to them. And so in the book, I share a series of questions that I give to every student I teach in our Summit Ministries summer programs. These are the 12-day courses where students 16 to 22 come to Colorado, spend 12 days learning from world-class Christian apologists and experts. But we equip them with questions. You know, how did you arrive at that conclusion? Why do you say that? What do you mean by that? Just those kinds of questions that allow people to feel like, okay, you're not just trying to preach at me. You're really trying to understand where I'm coming from. And then that creates an opening for people to be open to the truth in the way they might not have been before.
You had another guest on a while back, but it stuck with me. He said, in this postmodern world, the way that those who really were raised with no biblical context, no Christian context, these are people who never heard of Noah's Ark or anything like that. The way that they're being won over to Christ is that simply by meeting one Christian that they trust and respect. In other words, there was a relationship formed, like, I care about you as a person. We're going to do coffee together. I'm doing life with you. And that person goes, wow, you're not a wacko. You're not weird. You're a really wonderful person, and you care about me. I trust you. I respect you. Then they get, you know, the door opens, and they're able to ask questions. And again, that's just a great word for us. How about this one? So the third question is, does my life have meaning? Is it possible for me to find direction in my life? Start here. Talk about why that question can branch off into secular worldviews for people who aren't getting a biblical answer.
Well, 4 out of 5 people who are the age I work with, I mainly work with high school and college students, 4 out of 5 of them say they have no sense of purpose in life and that they know where they're going in life and why they would go there. And we talk about a midlife crisis. People today are even talking about a quarter life crisis because students are graduating from college without a clear sense of direction. So it's a crisis that really afflicts all of us. And other worldviews are telling us, look, there really is no point in life. Just try to meet your needs, get enough money to have some adventure, have some security, be sexually attractive, things like that. And that really is the ultimate point in life. In the book, I tell the story of an experience I had on a sled dog expedition. It was incredible to watch those animals, but because they were just living out their design, and they were filled with joy as they did it.
Wait a minute. Were you on the sled? Are you watching it?
I was on the sled.
Wow.
I was on the expedition
That's
with
them. Amazing.
Yeah, I was behind them, just watching the whole thing. I was there out there in the wilderness in Alaska. And it was incredible. But you think, how could I have that kind of joy and purpose? And the sled dog, the owner of the dogs, as we were chatting about this later, I said, how did you do it? Because you whispered the commands to them. They were very sensitive. They obeyed. He said, when you're doing what you're designed to do, your master can guide you with a whisper.
Whoa.
And I thought, wow, I live in a culture where everybody's yelling at me. Even the television commercials, I watch a football game and the television commercials come on at 20 decibels louder than the game. Everybody's yelling to try to get my attention. But there's this still small voice of Jesus saying, I have a calling for you. I have something for you to do. There is a purpose for your life. I want you personally because I've designed you. Psalm 139 says, God knit us together in our mother's wombs. We are fearfully and wonderfully made. That's a message that everybody in the world wants to hear.
Boy, we're going to pause here. So good. So good. Talking to Dr. Jeff Myers again. Title of his book is The Secret Battle of Ideas About God, Overcoming the Outbreak of Five Fatal Worldviews. We'll expound on those even just a little bit. We've got to get to these next two questions. Why can't we just get along? What will it take for us to stop fighting and find harmony? That's question number four. And then five, is there any hope for the world? So many things seem to be going wrong. Are we doomed? Dr. Jeff will answer those questions and will just sort of give us a synopsis of these five fatal worldviews. Such great conversation. Not enough time. Don't go away. We'll be back in a minute. Thanks so much for tuning in today. I'm Susie Larson. This is Live the Promise. Talking to Dr. Jeff Myers today. Title of his book is The Secret Battle of Ideas About God, Overcoming the Outbreak of Five Fatal Worldviews. Dr. Jeff, you're just going to have to come back and join us because I've got pages of notes left that we've not touched, and I'll hope we can dig into them again next time. But so far we've talked about these five really important questions that I think are so refreshing when you're talking about how people adapt worldviews. One is, am I loved? Number two is, why do I hurt? Three is, does my life have meaning? Well, four, we're on this one now. Why can't we just get along? What will it take for us to stop fighting and find harmony? Talk about how worldviews are developed out of that question.
Well, it's our life, it's our human experience, right? Chris Hedges is a professor at Princeton University, and he said that of the 3,500 years of recorded human history, only 268 years have been completely at peace. But the whole history of the world is the history of warfare and conflict and tension. And don't you ever just kind of wish that it would end? Don't you wish that there would just be harmony? But this is at the center of Jesus's teachings. He didn't say that harmony comes when we separate from one another and we just keep the peace. Jesus didn't say, blessed are the peacekeepers. He said, blessed are the peacemakers. He was drawing on this ancient, powerful Hebrew tradition of what's called shalom, the idea that the life of harmony and peace and prosperity and wellness is what we should all be striving for. In fact, the prophet Jeremiah told the captives in Babylon, he said, you seek the peace, you seek the shalom of the city in which you live there. Even though you're a captive, you seek its shalom, and in its shalom, you will find your shalom. So it's through the teachings of Jesus that we really learn to be people who bring peace on purpose, not just people who avoid conflict. but people who pursue that peace with one another. Now, other worldviews say we will have peace when all different and everything just melts into the oneness of all that is.
Get rid of a people group that, you know, that defies what you believe, you know.
That's exactly, so many believe that. The Marxist view was get rid of the rich people and then you will have peace. You know, the secular view is get rid of a religion and you will have peace. Everybody's got this big agenda that they're fighting for. And Jesus is saying in the middle of all of this, be there as a person who brings peace. Every day our question is, how can I help bring resolution? How can I help bring harmony? How can I help people recognize that the differences that they have with one another can still lead to harmony? So in the book, I thought a lot about that, and I realized, wow, these other worldviews, if you follow those, you will just end up in more and greater conflict than you ever had before. It's in that biblical idea of shalom. Love to write a book sometime that really delves into that, because it becomes the basis of everything. I was in Oxford University this summer studying that specifically in the Jewish library there. And it was fascinating because the Jewish scholars they kind of gathered around saying, okay, how do you see this fitting in? I said, look, guys, this is not just an idea of peace as in the absence of conflict. This is a way of seeing everything in the world. And so it was fun for me to see they were learning and growing as we were going through this process. There's something there, Susie. It'd be really fun to dig into.
That's your next book assignment. Make the mental note. That's a fantastic idea. But when you explore the idea, I mean, Jesus turned the worldviews, these secular worldviews, on their heads, because he said, you know, someone asks for your coat, give them your shirt. Someone, if your enemy comes against you, bless them. It's so radical. And yet it's in that place that seems so radical. If they ask you to go a mile, go two, that you find life. Because if the Spirit of God is in you and you decrease and he increases and you love people with a radical, selfless love, peace overwhelms you. Fruit spills out of you. It is an otherworldly proposition, isn't it?
I believe that it is. And there are so many stories to tell there. This has changed the way I live my life. It's changed the way I interact with other people. It's changed the way I interact with people who are in distress. You know, our company is pretty large, and I have a lot of employees. It's changed the way I interact with my employees. So in each way, I believe it's been profound. Yeah.
I'm looking forward to that next book. I hope you'll hurry up on that one. Anyway, no pressure. Okay, now question number 5. Is there any hope for the world? So many things seem to be going wrong. Are we doomed? What say you?
Well, this is the question you end up with if every other worldview, that if we cannot somehow eliminate religion or eliminate all the rich people or, you know, merge with the oneness that is all that is, you know, if we can't do that, then we can't have any hope for the world. But again, Jesus's answer to this, the Greek word for hope is elpis. And it doesn't mean that all conflict ceases. It means that you change your mind about what's important in life. You just decide, I'm going to be a person of hope. And when somebody curses me, I will bless. If I start to feel self-centered and I'm starting to get down, I turn around and bless somebody. I quote from this famous psychiatrist who wasn't even a believer named Carl Menninger. He said, if you feel that you're coming apart mentally, here's my advice to you. Lock yourself out of your house and go serve people.
Wow.
That's where you'll find wellness. Isn't that amazing? The guy wasn't even a believer, and he figured that out and taught that to millions and millions of people.
Man. Okay, so let's talk about this. We just got a few minutes left, but maybe this isn't the best question to wrap up, so I'll try to squeeze another one in after this. But I'm curious, what makes a bad idea stick and then spread? I mean, have you identified a common denominator where, you know, is it about the idea or is it about the vacuum where it finds itself?
Well, bad ideas, I really do think the analogy of a virus is very helpful. That bad ideas spread like viruses. They come in when we're vulnerable. They might even reside in us. A lot of times we have viruses that lay dormant in our bodies, and then in a time of great stress, when our immune system is weakened, they take advantage of that and they begin to reproduce. I think that is the key to understanding them. So it's not so much that we can stop bad ideas from coming into our minds and our hearts. It's that we have a strong immune system that's so focused on healthiness and what is right and what is true that the bad ideas don't make us miserable in the way they did before. Mm-hmm. It's kind of an inoculation of sorts. And that's what comes from the Bible. And I the reason I wanted to do it is because I think it's really important, not just that people understand a biblical worldview, we got to understand the ideas that are attacking us, right? If this is really a battle, if you went into battle, your commanding officer would make sure you know what the enemy tanks look like, what the enemy planes look like, what the enemy uniforms look like, what the enemy strategies look like. We really need to know the enemy. We need to know about these bad ideas. And I'll tell you, Susie, this is not something that most people know about. I'm just going to recommend right now. We did a free worldview checkup for people. Anybody listening can go to secretbattlebook.com and take this worldview checkup. 100,000 people or something like that have already taken this checkup. And it'll tell you what the worldview influences are. Don't be mad if you don't like your results. Just make it, it's something to really think about. We're more influenced by bad ideas than we realize because we don't know what they look like and how to respond with what Jesus teaches.
Thinking of two analogies, one I learned from my husband, one I learned from my son. But years ago, my son worked at a bank in the counterfeit unit, and he said, of course, the way you identify a counterfeit is you study the original. You study the original so well that you spot any form of counterfeit. And then my hubby used to say, the way that you create a good lawn is to have, get rid of weeds, is to have healthy grass. Just feed the health of the grass. It'll choke out any space for the weeds. And I think both of those do speak to know the word, read the word, understand the word, understand what those other views are. But I think for your own soul and self to be so healthy that your own soul spots a virus when it bumps into you,
That's right. Yeah. And that's what your immune system does. Your immune system doesn't get tricked by viruses. We just get lots of different kinds of viruses. But if it knows what the virus is, it can identify it and then it can act to counteract it. So, yes, we have to have that health, but we also have to have an immune system that's aware of what else is going on out there in the world. So I spend a lot of time on this. I have four children and we just spend a lot of time on this, and they're sensitive to it. They're aware of it. I just had an experience from last week, in fact, where my 14-year-old son, we were talking about music, and we were in another country where they don't speak English primarily, but they listen to American songs, and the songs are not censored there like they are here on the radio. So all the bad words and everything are there, and I explained this to them going to that other country, and we were walking past a place, and he said, "Did you hear that? And that one song in 20 seconds, they dropped the F-bomb 5 times, He said, "I'm just so glad there aren't any kids here." We just started talking about it. You can't eliminate the influences of the world, but you can help your kids understand, that's how people think and talk when they don't have a sense of meaning and purpose and direction. They're just angry. And, because he was aware of that, he was able to say, to get beyond being compelled or fascinated by that to just thinking of how sad it was that in that person's life, they have to use that kind of language to express themselves because they don't feel valued or they don't feel loved or they're angry and they don't have a sense of direction.
We have to pause here, Jeff. Our show is up and we've walked right through the prayer time, but I wanted to hear that last story. Hope again you'll join us back again, Dr. Jeff, because it's fantastic. Talking to Dr. Jeff Myers, A Secret Battle of Ideas About God. You've been listening to Live the Promise. I'm Susie Larson. In a bit, you'll find a podcast of today's program up on our website at myfaithradio.com. Coming up next for hour two, my good friend Liz Curtis Higgs joins us. We celebrate her brand new book, 31 Proverbs to Light Your Path. So don't go away. Another great hour is up ahead next. We'll be back in just a bit.